Matters is the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I'm Senator Mia Costello, and I'm joined by Senator Kevin Meyer, Senate President, and Senator Gary Stevens, and Senator Kathy Heaton will be with us about briefly. Tonight, we have the introduction of the governor's income tax proposal to help solve our budget challenges. It's Senate Bill 134, and I thank the administration for being here and available at our earlier meeting today to report the bill. So we will be hearing a presentation of the bill, and we'll consider the bill, taking any questions from committee members, and then the intent tonight is to really give the public a chance to testify. I think there are a lot of people online and here in Juneau who would like to weigh in on this important piece of legislation that the governor has introduced. And so with that, I would like to welcome the administration, and please state your name for the record, and go ahead with your presentation. We have Ted Alford, who's the director of the Government Tax Division, and Brandon House, who's the deputy director. With that, welcome. Thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be here. And Madam Chair, we're out of time, and we're more than happy to involve you in the future meeting. For the record, my name is Ken Alper. I'm the Director of the Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. I'm the Deputy Director of Fiscal Affairs. I'm going to take the lead for most of this presentation. And for the record, my name is Thomas, Deputy Director of the Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. So, let's jump right into it. This is the governor's proposed income tax bill. History of the income tax in Alaska. It began in 1949 at 10% of the federal tax liability, and by 1961 it taxed about 60% of the federal tax liability. And in 1975 it became the federal tax liability and attached to the federal taxable income, and the ranges for the rates rather were from 3% to 14.5%. And then in 1980, the governor's proposal creates a tax on individuals' income at a rate of 6% of the federal income tax liability. And then this slide breaks down what that means for Alaskans and for taxpayers. It shouldn't go past the federal tax is based on taxable income, federal taxable income, and there are several brackets. At the 10% bracket, the effective Alaska rate would be 0.6% of the federal taxable income. And the slide showed that they're very short.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So before we get into the slide, what do you want to lessen from in that federal income tax rate? You probably have a mean, right?
To be fair, that's a very useful. I actually don't have the information with me, but we can get back to you on that.
Thanks.
And then, there's another submission we gave to the committee that has some tables that show roughly the effective tax impact on different household sizes, individual income levels. A lot of the answer to your question will be within those charts. So the question you're asking is, now it's not just a matter of the income level, but the household size. And of course, the study of tax brackets are marginal rates, meaning the lowest X dollars or the lowest rate, the next set of dollars, or the next highest rate, and the settlement of that, the highest or low high. To a certain extent, our tax would be something we would have the average of other states.
I have a question about the policy decision at the 6%. Was there a discussion? Did you look at the modeling? How did you arrive at the 6%?
And to answer the question, the answer to this, I was incomplete. As I had, when it's been passed as written, we would be the 43rd or 44th state in income tax association, or another, we would probably be the lowest income tax rate in the nation. So it is a very low rate. The reason was we wanted to do research on the proposed bills by the legislature. And the governor had the other revenue bills, so you're aware of the 24th Protection Act, which was around when the fire rate changed the nature of the dividend, the oil and gas bill, six smaller excess tax bills, and the fisheries bill. Spending that from disability research over the next couple of years, we got to a place where we were still at $200 million short of the balanced budget. So this is the last piece to complete the puzzle of a balanced budget. So this is the rate that generates the desired $200 million.
So am I to assume that if there are other proposals that generate revenue, if they do not pass, that is the administration's policy decision that this might grow from 6% to another percent?
Well, Madam Chair, I think that's the legislature's decision, not the administration's. The governor's proposed the bill that's before you, he's stated a desire to balance the budget. Now, the question was, do we all this? The estimates around this are based on $50 rules, so we're not even there. Obviously, the idea of a balanced budget is itself a policy decision. You want to balance the budget at $50 oil, $70 oil, et cetera. So, no, I don't think the governor is going to be amending his income tax proposal, but you should just keep in mind that the intent of the number before you is trying to put together for 3 times and test the idea of a balanced budget.
Thank you. Questions
for the
Senator Stevens,
Senator
Stevens.
What's the highest rate that we're having in the United States?
So, what's the highest rate is 3%? I'm going to decide to give that information to you. There's really two different attachments for state income taxes. A few of them, and ours would be one of those who are attached to the IRS federal income tax liability. So that would be a flat rate, and it builds in the federal government's progressivity into our own. Most states with income tax tied to adjusted gross income, so it's a smaller percentage of the cost of the smaller percentage of the larger number, essentially. So what that does is create a layer of secondary policy decisions for legislation that passes a percent by the profits of the community, 2% of the first 50,000, 3% beyond that. So the panel that was discussed is being through the stuff there, how these are different types of data and the tobacco and the company vehicles.
And the choice of the students in grants comes in. This doesn't answer it. There's different rates on here, but they're subject to tax that we need to buy at different rates or tax bank at different rates. And I believe I have seen another table that shows a rating to try to determine if your income is X, then the state would be first, second, third. So you back in that. Next slide tries to put the last slide in perspective of with federal tax brackets. So the shows believe that the federal tax brackets for a single filer are from Georgia and household, and then on the left is the federal and the proposed losses for rates on federal tax income.
So, if I recall correctly, the governor made a statement that more than 3% of Alaskans would have minimal tax liability under this proposal. Am I hearing that right? 43%?
Okay, the chair, so you just want to say an estimate that we took the IRS data, and 43% of Americans don't pay income tax. And we use that number for our estimate of what Alaskans would be paying, the percent of Alaskans would be paying.
Thank you. So that's a good 100%.
The result is correct. We're not sure if it's on the data that's available to us.
The percentage of people paying zero tax at the federal level has increased over the last 20 or 30 years as the federal tax codes become somewhat more complicated.
is a lot more clear. So the most common one there, income tax factor, the child tax rate, it tends to zero out the slightly lower income Americans. The same structure would kind of do ours. So, yes, by subsection, the substantial percentage of classes would pay zero, but almost exclusively those would be lowest income classes. you would pay tax, and I don't know whether you would get credit in Alaska for that tax.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you. Melissa, two of my issues are talking about this in a very exciting way. The first item, law residents pay tax for salaries that are earned in Alaska. Do you have a problem with how much are you expecting to
We're working with the Department of Labor's information on that on the workforce and estimation of the number of losses that are income for outside. But about 15% of the people who work in Alaska don't live here. So we're expecting roughly that percentage of the total to come from our residents. And then there's going to be another. There's a big offset to that from the income. For the income of Alaskans that essentially earn in other states and maybe subtracted, there's a larger number coming in than going out. And what's interesting with this tax as well, it captures a lot of types of income that people who think of as wage income, for example, that you know, these partnerships or corporations who are not currently taxed in Alaska. Or they obviously Alaska based entities, they would be their owners would be paying this income tax.
Thank you.
You're saying that 15% figure is a good working number. That's the percentage of workforce that's not a resident. The very least 15% of the taxes should be coming from that 15%. Those jobs are sort of a measure toward the jobs that are the jobs which are above average and below average. The way it matters is probably fairly close to average. So if I were to guess myself, I'll have to pick up the revenue of the 15%. That's the number that's built into our model.
So on slide 7, this is we provided two slides. We've gone over some of that already in the tax matrix earlier. But the slide shows for a married couple filing joint with three children from $0 to $20,000 and up to $100,000 in gross income, what the estimated Alaska tax would be. So $50,000, that's $15, and up to $100,000, that's $165 in the estimated tax in Russia. And the following slide shows someone having the same household with two children, and a similar gross income of $20,000 is zero, and $50,000, $97 tax for Russia, and $100,000, that's in $791.
Thank
you.
How does the income tax work at the state level? Is that anything on someone? So, like, if you have a property or income off of that, is that taxed both at the state and federal level? Or are fees, which are taxed at the federal level, is that taxed at the state level as well? Is this just money you get from your employer?
For the chair, Senator Meyer, the answer is it depends. So, if the FD depends on where you are, what your net worth income, what the EFT is, for low income generally, that's what it's tax. Or if you would have, you would be able to offset the rental income with expenses, so you would have an operating loss, in which case there would be no tax due. So it really depends on the individual, but as a general rule, low income is subject to tax. There are exceptions. Example of interest on bonds
taxes. So, I mean, if you have a zoning that you can meet that 50,000 off money, that's it. The amount was before, not the tax, not 50,000.
It's just a reminder, the county doesn't find the size, but you always spend $1,000 across the road, so you can pay taxes and not pay taxes. You know, that is a reminder that, if you need to do a last and work for us, and all the earnings come from the last resource, their federal tax return is 51 years from the last producer income. So that they do 6% of whatever that bottom line of the earnings they were going to do for the children to come fix these again, is very individual and they can drive it from what you want to say.
Thank you. So, if I'm getting $100,000, if you're talking about the one example you gave, then I would have paid you, might be a certain amount of money that you would go to the same banks for my kids and myself.
So there is a higher in most cases, yes.
Thank you.
Mrs. Fox, perhaps do you know how many losses would fall into the category of receiving income from working with the state? Is that information that we have yet?
I'm sure we're best going to find that. There are studies that are out there, but we're still analyzing that. We're not sure that there's data available to us, accurate data. Our research here at National States, we're currently not receiving that data. We will be receiving it this year, so we'll have better information next year. That gives the specific information for the taxpayer. Which we may need to analyze W-2 information based on the address of that data, anyway, which may or may not tell us where that income is at.
So currently there are operators yet spending in the measure of income tax. And when we say it's worth income tax, we'll ask because right from the losses, as far as the operator month ago, is that a list? And so apparently, the state doesn't get that information since we've been flying. And the other state, income tax, is about 30% of the federal tax liability. But Hines last is proposed to have a rate. So the states will still have zero tax. And those are listed on the slide at the bottom there. Two states, tax on the dividend, and the rest are basically not a return income. Subject your ask corporations and partnerships with these talks and that has you to shows up on the individual's federal tax return and therefore would be down tax to the state role. And as corporations we get questions from time to time on the assets we do. The last thing I said a corporate income tax. As corporations are excluded from that tax federal income, whether it's no income on the just being more as well as corporations. In government corporation, you know, if an corporation is owned by a corporation, then it may be subject to tax. In government, it will ask about both non-residents and residents, so we're kind of under this proposed bill. And as a majority of our customers, 25%, the rest will be paid in all of the banks.
On that last bullet, one of the things that we hear from in research and also groups that have been very vocal in advocating for a widespread approach to the budget challenges and faces that whatever solution we have, and it's fair. So how do you balance that sense of everyone is going to be affected if there's a fairness approach to this with that last fact that only half the people would be paying an income tax?
I'm trying to say, good question. The administration does want to be fair in this approach, and many of the taxes were discussed. We have a lot of different options that we proposed. Ultimately, this one was chosen to try to have a progressive tax that allows those that have a poor opportunity really to pay their tax.
Is that a policy call that runs across all of heard that, for example, the tobacco tax is regressive, and it fills a small 1% of the deficit.
Yes, there's a, I guess, there's a bit of range of types of taxes before you and before the legislature. The taxes is some progressive alcohol tax as well. But also, in this unit presentation, there proposes the right reduce the federal funded, which is in many ways the most progressive tax of all. If one considers it a tax, and that's an issue of very personal opinion, policy difference across the spectrum. But if all less than zero, you ask it to be equally to a reduced dividend on one side of the equation, but on the other end, the proposal is to take out a greater tax from those with the possibility of paying an extra income tax of 10. So, is that simple to counter with that?
Thank you.
So, the revenue impact of the RSU is like half of that. And we'll see in later slide closing the budget down is the estimate is $200 million for what this tax raise. But I would kind of consider this actually for the withholding. And no actual tax returns would be filed or due until April 2018. So it would be for tax year 2017. Tax returns would be filed in April 2018. But the withholding would already start in March 2017.
Any question about trusts? Many states have exempted trusts from the state income taxes. Was that something that the administration considered? And if so, why have you not exempted trusts? And if you did not consider it, is something that maybe is important?
And sir, in the department, we didn't consider that prior to writing our white paper on income taxes. We're fairly experienced when it comes to individual income taxes. And I have talked to folks about the individuals about the trust issue since then. So we're not aware of the administration knowing about that issue prior to the bill being
made. And then has the Department's Economic Research Group done any modeling on the economic impacts of the income taxes? If you haven't,
Madam Chair, in the model that the program group put together, it does have built into it a drag on the economy. How much the trust issue factors in that, I'm not 100%, but we can provide an analysis of how that came to that.
Thank you so much, Nina.
Madam Chair, I appreciate you talking about returns. If you are really sure, the returns are due. It's very hard for people in this building to file a return because we're always a turn on the button. It doesn't have a decision. How does that work? You have to file, if you reach that point to make a filing, how does that work? The expectation is that the amounts of tax would be due when you file your federal tax. From my experience, in this building now from being late, if you file in October, but you owe tax as of April, there's a penalty interest on the intervening 6 months. I would presume through writing to the President's Chamber to establish a similar penalty interest mechanism of the deteriorating statutory duty that would be any goal on the federal statutory duty. The bill does call the federal statutes. It allows the department to adopt federal statutes, which we plan on doing to incorporate the main regulations that are in the federal code. The filing date is April 15th. And the payment is April 15th. You can get an extension of the final in October, but the payment is still due April 15th. So, most CPAs would counsel you to pay your tax, your senior tax, on April 15th, offer an extension, and then file a financial return in October. So, if you need to file a extension, you don't function in the shape of a federal city extension, or go to the tax, pay your next federal
statutes as well, and they allow for, if you have a federal exemption on funds to the corporate tax return, then you can do the same thing for income tax.
So, take one exemption as well.
So, you are saying that withholdings will be paid in 2017, assuming this will pass. So, that means in approximately 6 months after the bill passes, assuming it passes, you will have to replace, according to this law, 44 full-time employees and 16 part-time employees, and So, when the administration says that the estimated, I'm going to call it, take from this is $200 million, that's subtracting out 60 new employees in the software and the time factor.
To be sure, it would be sold that $200 million is a gross amount. This one would be.
So 10% of approximately 400,000 Alaskan households is 38,000 people files. That's a substantial team of people voted in Iowa to deposit those checks. They didn't go on IC on those items and have them make the record. Those are 16 full-time forces at the bottom of this volume. So in the letter, we talk about full-time employees or FTEs. There's 52 of them, 44 full-time, 16 part-time. And the total cost per year in the year is about $7 million and change.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. We hear from other departments. The difficulty in finding employees. Is there been any consideration about where these employees will come from?
Madam Chair, we've had some internal discussions about that it is difficult to find qualified individuals. We have hired corporate tax office from other states. Some of our corporate tax officers have left to go work for the state. So we're going to hopefully get some expertise from in Alaska that they've worked outside and income tax reform. It may be difficult, but we would hope that they would find some
expertise.
Yes, all of the board decision committees may be located. To the chair, Senator Stevens, we anticipate that half will be located in the Fisher County Jail.
Now, for college education, I want to look for a job, and the housing market is like affordability is about 30%. I mean, have you thought through whether or not they should be, where they should be located?
Madam Chair, we have just had discussions about where they should be located, and that the affordability will be. Of course, housing is what we do have. Our contractors here now are 27 of them. Some of you know what else is safe. Of course, if we have a lot of people on the system, we would probably house most of the contractors in the area to be housing here. But I think that that's a session that we have to continue to have. We perform extra service on that policy.
Certainly, thank you.
Clarification on this one, I should have said this right on here before my term. The full complement of 60 employees, the full complement of the budget to us by 19. Really, the first true auditing exercise after the payment of the first taxes in April of 2016. We only have a little more than half that on the FY18 budget, and it comes out as well as FY19 revenues up to speed. So we've got a couple of years to get everyone recruited and get the right people on the job. Ultimately, I'm sure this will be a statewide recruitment, and if we can't have it in one location in Canada, we'll look at that. And something new in these efforts might run to be allowed to some Fairfax. I say that with some trepidation because the tax division does not have any employees there outside of general records, but this would be a very big new thing in our world.
Thank you.
So you continue on the slide now. Slide 12, rather. Employees make the dollar from tax. Employees meet the age of challenge, as we discussed. Companies have got funded websites to design and develop and test the technology to administer the tax. And we estimate a bill of over 450,000 tax returns to be filed annually. I checked with Vermont, who has a similar population as ours, and asked how many tax returns they received on the line. That's the number that they reported. We estimate that it would be similar for us. That we may have more residents working in Alaska than we would presume to hire. But Vermont does also have a population that comes in for the same tour. We just made $250,000 off the whole appropriation for the contractor and the administrator with just that company. So, although the community decides there's already a certain portion of the capital appropriation for the software and then annual staffing costs of $6 million. And the next slides, 13 and 14, she'll have the income tax exempt to the governor's plan to close the budget gap. And on slide 14, that's the last item there, the income tax comes out of the tax that we're going to receive.
Any questions from committee members?
Please continue.
the sexual analysis. Section 1 adds the English chapter, which is Amos 4:3:22 for individual income taxes. It imposes an income tax on both residents and members and individuals. The tax is used for some of the federal, the residents' federal tax liability. And the tax for non-residents is used for some of the portion of federal tax liability that is sourced in the state. I'm going to find it with a buy rate to residents, the tax is paid in another state, I'm covering in that state. And 1330, the banks for annual returns of the Department of Revenue with taxes due on the date for the federal tax return, that's the annual 15th. And the taxpayer must provide a copy of the IRS return, the department is authorized to pay refunds of overpaid taxes. 2240, the finance sources of income of federal tax payment are subject to the tax. And 2250, the notes for withholding from wages and salaries by employers, as those withholding taxes periodically related to the state. 2260 authorizes the Department of Revenue to administer the tax. 2190 adds some definitions for specific terms. And Section 2 repeals exemptions related to foreign tax credits for political contributions that existed under the prior income tax was repealed in 1980. Section 3 is applicability of Section 6. So, the new tax applies to income received or after the effective date of the bill. Section 4 authorizes the Department of Revenue to adopt regulations. Section 5 is the effective date for Section 4. And so, we just started on the regulations. Section 6 is the effective date of January 1st, 2013, the election of all. And that concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much, Rick. I appreciate your patience on this. We went through 200 bills earlier today. Any other questions from the committee members? Thank you very much. We will probably have you back, and we will dedicate the rest of the hearing today to public testimony. Mr. Albert, if you wish to make
a comment. I know you know this, Madam Chair, but I'm not a lobbyist for the legislature, and I spend income tax and tax on election people. We haven't done this in 35 years. These are different times, and these are very challenging times, and I ask you to really look at this as part of the bigger package of measures to try to resolve the fiscal situation, and the subsequent desire of us from the governor and the House to improve the tax on election people if they were to need to do so.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So we have 27 Alaskans who are waiting to testify on Senate Bill 134. I want to thank those who've been listening in from the various legislative information offices throughout the state. I'm going to start in Delta Junction, move to the funeral aisle here. Then go to Mapsu, finally, then I'll go to Anchorage, Ketchikan, Homer, Fairbanks, and then finally I will grab those folks who are calling in from their personal cell phones. So with that, I would like to invite Winston Duncan, who is calling in for Delta Junction, and I would respectfully request that the work possible that you are calling such an hour. So the next person is Zephora Dalton, calling in from Delta Junction. Can you hear me? Yes, I can.
Oh my God, I'm going to start being heard.
I have to reserve for Dalton, and I'll go to Sharon Dalton and then Patrick.
Thank you. Without taxes and not even without taxes, and I just make it any easier. And remember, just by the gloves, once you get your hand on it,
say we're the least practices in the country. think of that. I know that it's your own right, and I think we need to stand up and be adults and address the situation. And I hope that we can be brave enough to be smart with the public hearing in our legislature, at least 10%. I think that would get us closer to some of our cause and rights and acknowledge that the budget that doesn't even work at $30 a barrel that we're getting now. So having a little extra to make things work is going to be important. And then also the PFD is regression, as I noted earlier. And I don't like that at all, that where a 3-year-old is going to be paying as much as a bad cat millionaire. So I'm all for the income tax. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Carolyn Storm, followed by Dallas Mannings. Hello, my name is Carolyn Storm. I'm a British architect from Anchorage. I'm here with a lot of PTA. I'm the chair of the advocacy committee. There are four other members of the Alaska PTA here this evening. We are all volunteers representing 130 local units across the state, made up of approximately 6,000 members. I would just like to say that the Alaska PTA supports the governor's plan for as a starting point to balance the budget and for forward-thinking funding for the state. 56 respondents in the latest Rasmussen poll favor the governor's sustainable Alaska plan. I also support impacts. Strongly support impacts. I don't mind paying for the services that I receive. I have in the past, I live in Canada, much higher income tax rates there, and you know what you pay for. Obviously, the PTA is here advocating for our child's education, our children's education. I think that there have been too many cuts already to the budget, and it's affecting our kids, it's affecting our kids' education. So again, I'd like to just really support it in your
thank you. Thank you very much, Carolyn. Allison.
Thank you. Allison Arians, I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm a small business owner. I have a bakery. I'm also a long-term retire and serving for Vice President of the Alaska PTA in Anchorage. And I'm 34 PTA units and we're going to accomplish amazing things in their schools. First, I want to say thank you to my senator, Senator Diesel, for keeping me updated on very many different proposals that are coming out. I appreciate your e-designers and your commentary on them that I get very frequently because I also appreciate that you asked for input as your constituent, so thank you very much for doing that. I too support the governor's budget, including income tax. I'd like to be on record to say that along with thousands of PTA members in Alaska, we want to pay for the services that we receive from our children and also our grandchildren in the future for any of the community. Every year, Alaska PTA holds a legislative issues conference to determine our legislative priorities. This year, we met in November and we reached very many priorities, and one of which relates to tonight's hearing, so I just like to read that. Our current budget situation is not sustainable and can only stabilize the new sources of general fund revenue. Alaska PTA supports a long-term fiscal plan for Alaska that includes new sources of general fund revenue. So this is something that we're discussing in the members of this community lesson from the bottom line. We ask the legislature to act now, this session, to put a new sustainable budget plan in place while the options are still available, including an income tax. Even the status quo will carry the constitutional budget reserve and the permanent food items reserve, which will ultimately fund the permanent fund for future generations. And income tax is an important component of this new structure. Right now, many have made careers to make their money in Alaska, but don't live here. Women and oil workers don't pay taxes to Alaska. It's time for them to pay their fair share if the best cost to contribute to the services that we enjoy. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. My name is Lawrence Sandel. I am president of Alaska PTA. I'm also a small businessman working under the Trust Medicaid waiver program as a sole proprietor. Waiving the change, the structure of our state's budget was a major of Alaska's credit rating. A credit downgrade would increase the state's cost of borrowing, driving upstate and municipal costs when we can reach the point. It would make the natural gas pipeline project much more expensive, and it would create an overall chilling effect on investment statewide. A sustainable upstate budget that includes a state income tax as part of the overall economic structure is needed. Alaska PTA is in favor of paying the state income tax.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, the last page of the Alaska Airfields is available, and we've supplied you with a resolution that I just wanted to relay into the record tonight that we just voted in our reception here, just our reception here in February. That the title of the resolution supporting the state income tax. Whereas Alaska is in the throes of a $3.8 billion budget deficit, which grows closer to $4 billion every day. Whereas the oil, which is traditionally funded 90% of the state's operating budget, is currently only funding about 20% due to the low oil prices and diminishing production. Whereas Alaskans have the lowest tax burden by far of any other state in the nation, whereas the Alaskan workers must be willing to participate in the shared sacrifice necessary to retain essential public services, whereas the income tax is among the least regressive taxes and will generate the greatest contributions from Alaskan's most wealthy citizens, whereas the non-resident workers took $2.6 billion in earnings out of the state last year without paying any taxes whatsoever. Whereas the income tax is only one part of a comprehensive solution for solving the Alaska massive budget deficit. Whereas the governor has proposed an income tax equals a 6% of one's total income tax liability, with a married couple filing jointly earning gross income of $100,000 annual with two child dependents, using one of the standard deductions would amount to $626. Therefore, they resolved the Alaska AFL-CIO supports the governor's bill, Senate Bill 134, and House Bill 250, an act related to the taxation of income. Individuals. And I do have seven grandchildren and a great grandchild that I want to see more of a future of Alaska.
I'm the Vice President for the Alaska Heritage Association for legislation. And as you heard, Alaska PTA supports Senate Bill 134. And I would just like to share that Alaska state expenditures per capita have been almost the lowest of any state in the U.S. Our individual tax burden is indeed the lowest of the nation. I think that Peter Knapp had it right when he suggested that we really need what I term myself as a whole amount of strategy, congressional budget, shortfall, cuts, the overspending, taxes, new taxes, and also having to do with part time resident. SB 134 is expected to generate $3 million per year, which you just heard. But better yet, this is a financial tax, a really, really complex thing, and I'm sure they're not rushing to it. So I beg the Senate and the House to think about this, do research, rather than spend time talking about Minnesota campuses. Thank you.
Thank you. 3 pounds of revenue, definitely can't just have to wait to get that back when we need to.
we have, unfortunately, way too much budget and way out of our revenues. As Michelle mentioned, welfare is unsafe, but in Alaska, the least most generous in the country. Your business or $10 actually need to be among the least generous in this country. We simply don't have that money to give it to people who don't work. Unfortunately, people in Alaska have some education earning on health and social services. If you look at where our spending goes, these parties, portions of the budget are in time control. That's how it is today, but we can't afford it. We're also managing no PSPs and income tax. Most of the reason that Doug has very negative consequences long term. These ideas of looking at the state and city is a very, very optimistic means of over-optimism in the short and medium term. Again, on the fairness question that was brought up, I don't think it's so much concerning that the bathroom and alcohol tax is a concern for residents. We don't have enough money to buy alcohol and food, and you can buy food and not alcohol. Now that you're saying you're at the point that we're not going to spend as much on the thing we don't. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. So I'm going to papers at the White House with Elijah Wong, followed by Mike Cray, Colin Tronick, Brian McGee, and then Jeremy Price. Elijah? Feel free to mention your name and provide your testimony on 7134.
I'm Elijah. I'm with Mongo Atkins. I just wanted to show my opposition to the income tax. We do see money directly outside of organization. I have been struggling to save money myself personally, not for home, and knew that for resting this would be made it much harder to use them.
Great, thank you. Ready, Brian?
My name is Rick Gray. My background is in pipeline mining engineering in Anchorage here. I work in Alaska, Canada, and Russia on these projects. I'm currently a volunteer for the Alaska Policy Forum, and I've been tested by the alcohol myself. Now, the longer income tax on Alaskans would take $200 million a year from family budgets. How can state government be spending our money? For one, this is already wasted money on gas pipeline drains, which oil industry experts know will not likely happen for decades. Alaska has squandered an astounding $500 million, mostly in corporate welfare and transmitter in the pipelines, with nothing of value to show for it. That is 2.5 years of government-offered income tax collections just to recover from that one boondoggle. 2.5 years. Now, when I was president of Pivot Electric, we had a call for a moment of silence for particularly grinding and sad occasion. And this strikes me with my professional background as almost a similar grave and sad occasion. 2.5 years of income tax collection done on collections of family budgets to plug the hole that we've already wasted $500 million in gas pipeline drains. So just think about that. Think about the magnitude of this. I think the slight majority on behalf of Alaskans voted to pay attention to last year's budget balance. My hat's off to you, and we've got to guard up when we urge the Senate and the House to push back and try to restore credibility to our state. We must cut billions out of this budget and stop waste like this before even thinking about an income tax or slashing people's permanent subsidies. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Colin Tronick.
Good evening, Mayor Costello and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Paul Tronic. I'm a resident of Alaskan. Situated at Center Hospitals. I'd like to vote in opposition to Title 11 for the current income tax proposal. Based on our state tax, Illinois deficit, federal offer, and there are these eight separate bills that would increase taxes on hard-working Alaskans. The cumulative total of the tax plan is $437 million for fiscal year 2018, and that comes from a presentation on Senate Bill 172, the tax cut on the motor fuel on January 27th. In my opinion, the most egregious bill any other plan is the proposal to reinstate the individual income tax. According to the overall plan, there would be over $450 million in new taxes, and Commissioner Fosbeck recently noted that under current oil prices, the governor's plan allows them to discuss the senior dividend range from $3 to $5 million. I'm personally opposed to resurrecting income tax for three simple reasons. It's unfair to the world, jobs will be lost, and economic growth in Alaska will be stifled. We're in this fiscal crisis primarily because of two reasons in my view. For the past 40 years, Alaskans have unfortunately allowed their government to irresponsibly spend and have not been handed real measures to put in place to secure fiscal sustainability for future generations. Likewise, for a combination of reasons, our states are not unable to adequately develop our abundant resources that should have helped diversify state governments relying on oil revenues. The governor's income tax proposal is a little unfair, in my opinion, because it unduly places the burden of fixing this financial crisis on Alaska's next generation, who essentially has had no say in the way state government has run on this function for the past 40 years. And so if the government's tax proposal is approved, then Alaskans like myself, who are just beginning their careers, will be forced to pay punitive taxes for the irresponsible mismanagement of Alaska's tremendous oil wealth. It's well known for Alaska's current leaders, many of whom are nearing their retirement, have had successful careers after moving to Alaska during pipeline construction and oil booming that followed, to have brought opportunity and prosperity for Alaska's next generation of leaders simply because they failed to restrain the government's spending habits. There are many studies out there showing the negative impact that income taxes have on economic growth and job loss. In 2015, there was an article that came out that labeled the governor's income tax proposal as being more successful than the idea in 2015. In my opinion, that is a correct assessment. There was a study done by the Nonpartisan Tax Foundation that essentially took across a broad spectrum of experts and economists believe that taxes on corporate and personal income are particularly harmful to economic growth. And in this time of low oil prices, the legislature and the governor should be given everything to increase our economic growth and not decrease it. I'd like to note that Alaska currently has the qualified corporate income tax foundation, and that's from the tax foundation number. Current income tax submitted to the economic downturn would be prevalent. Instead of finish by just noting that I encourage the legislature to look at a couple of different ways to reduce their deficit that would be measurable to what the governor has proposed in the income tax. There are hundreds of millions of dollars unfunded but artificial PPNs out there. State worker health care, contribution to the old tax, Medicaid reform, pension reform. Being led by Senator Coghill, the role of the people would result in hundreds of millions of dollars in savings. So, in essence, again, I would say opposition to Senate Bill 134, and thank you for the time to put this back on.
Thank you. Next is Ryan McGee, followed by Senator Chris.
My name is Ryan McGee, and I speak today in opposition to the state income tax. One of the reasons is that state spending moves to increase in control and unsustainable. as just one example would be the fact that there are about 2,000 positions in the various departments that are unfilled and still receive funding. This results in many departments spending money at the end of the year just because they need to use their own budget. Eliminating that waste is one of the many ways to cut costs and run more efficient government. I invite various members of the legislature to continue to find many subjects to increase in the budget. Second is that the implementing an income tax within Alaska will not very much address the overall issue of having Alaska's growing debt. If this tax were to be implemented, it would only bring in about $200 million. This will be taking more money from Alaskans and putting it in the hands of government rather than using it in the hands of Alaskans to use the bill or something like a high cost of living here. I agree with the many members that urge you to oppose that bill of reform. My name is Jeremy Price, and I'm the Alaska State Director of Americans for Prosperity. On behalf of thousands of grassroots activists across the state, I would like to state our opposition to the state income tax. There's the same message over a year. If you tax something more, you get less of it. If you tax something less, you get more of it. Recently, I found myself walking the halls of our state capital, and I was the first person to ask me the following question. Am I concerned that they're cutting the budget too much in order to get the economy? My response to that question was, and is, no, I'm more concerned with the economic impact of taking money from the private sector that funds government. I've been with some money from years of rental prices because the legislature will spend what it receives. There is a study called Rich States, Poor States, on the following, quote, while all taxes are harmful, not all taxes are equally damaging to the economy. Taxes on capitalism are the most economically damaging, while taxes on consumption and property are less economically damaging. Therefore, consumption companies keep their line primarily on income taxes, which usually underperforms their counterparts, which use work-related taxes on personal income, close quote. One of the other authors of this study released a new lunch over there on March 10th. The man was talking by economic family. I encourage the community to extend this in form of a briefing and try to check now and further as state income tax. What will your legacy be for us? Alaska's future will be forever changed with income tax. We need you to protect our future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next up, Dr. Kitchell, Illinois, first D.J. Donald Westland, followed by Tony Lafford.
Hello, Mr. Manager. My name is Donald Westland. Address form 134. This is the law that burdens people today in a lot of Texas. People that rely on handouts will not pay taxes. This will not increase government. The question is whether the budget deficit, which is zero, will the income tax be repealed? I support the permanent fund bill. I think that all of the reasons should be used as a challenge. Why do we have permanent fund? Why do we take money back? Why have to pay the state back the money? You have to pay an income tax. But the legislature still looks at buying a $40 million building in Anchorage. Do not have the building. I support a tax, a consumption tax. That makes the most sense to me. You can exempt the tax on food and fuel, but everything else, I support on consumption. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. I understand that I'm going to be able to do this. If so, then
especially to the state in Cleveland, thank just really the procedure must be all say on that.
Thank you.
corporations coming with the terroristic activities of the IRS on the Washington statements. I clarify your information that this is absolutely too much minimum complex to just inquire whether or not to go to the person. When this trial person is with a big campaign, that's why we're here, because we kept saying big new things in the rich years. And now we're trying to deal with all these big new things. We just need to cut some of those old big things and not add any more big new things. Please do not let this out of committee. Don't let it go forward. It's the worst possible thing you can do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. And next, we'll go to the Homer Island, where we have three individuals. I'll start with Wes, followed by Ken, and then Michael. Waiting off the net on their own individual phones.
first, Kelsey, followed by Ken Squires. Kelsey, we're not able to hear you.
My name is Joseph Polinski, and I am a sophomore at the University of Alaska Anchorage, where I serve with all Republicans and Democrats for a degree. However, I'm not just a family inmate, but a true philosophy. I'm just a family because I've been strongly encouraged to SB-134. I work full-time in addition to being a full-time student, which is fantastic. I require a carefully budget every time I spend in order to be successful and pay for my schooling. I'm going to take a back for the most negative changes to my life. As an Acorn resident, I already have a high cost of living, especially when it comes to the hospitality. Additional taxes may be even more burdensome to maintain my independence from the state. This is one of the negative effects that the current income tax would have on myself and many of my lessons. This is not the way to solve the fiscal woes of our state. Alaska's problem is not a lending shortfall. It is a spending shortfall as a result of a very bloated state government. Alaska spends more per capita than any other state in the union. Before even considering increased reported taxes, our chambers first begin to regret spending spending rates and greater than state government to constitutional and sustainable levels. There are many services provided by the state that can be barely handled by a private sector. Additionally, more taxes are the only real threat to limit the size and scope of government. In order to achieve a constitutional and limited state government, we must limit the funds the state has access to. In order to achieve a prosperous future, the state will ask to have limited spending, and by extension, the tax burden on individuals and businesses will fund itself. Thank you for the opportunity to
share my information today. Thank you. Next, James Squires, followed by Jan Grant and Stuart Thompson.
Madam Chair, my name is James Squires. I'm a local law enforcement for Alaska. I'm also a CPA. I'm testifying today against Senate Bill 134. I believe we should be talking about reducing the size of government considerably lower rather than wasting time enacting the authorization of the state income tax, which comes from PSD. I listened to Mr. Bradley's discussion about the rules for state affairs a week or so ago, and I concur with his testimony that we should be continuing to cut and not run for one set of funds and justice. I encourage all members of the committee to listen to his testimony. I endorse the judicious use of the Army Reserve and the power of the majority of the Congress rules to lower the overall budget to 4.5 billion or lower this year. As you can see, we're going to fund the deficit from the Army Reserve last year. We have already set valuable precedent in this crisis, as many have advised. We need to have contributed in another attraction to this diabolical plan. I live in a summer of 3-day tax cuts last summer in Fairbanks, and basically, it was the Delphi meeting to fill the gap to fund the high-level government that is necessary. This spending contract only brings in a couple hundred million dollars. There's even a way to get that out of the current structure. For example, the Secretary of State Affairs on February 16th and the Common Fund Corporation, Angela Rydell, stated that the original inflation program for the repayment of time on the Common Fund was fully invested in bonds. She said that nearly 80% of the tax investment that they hold are self-inflation program is not that necessary today. That would mean hundreds of millions of additional funds were earned in the prior years, quite a few million this year, and hundreds of millions going back and going forward as the CPI goes up. Where is your bill representing this issue? We should be talking about that. The income tax bill has huge negative ramifications in years to come. And as a lesson, you folks need to take a hard look and roll back the size of the government to 2006 levels and just its current functioning population. Don't let SB-134 leave the committee. There are better ways for your fellow senators to use their valuable time. Show them the bill. I'd also like to add a hard one to the professors
Nancy Montana, followed by Stuart Thompson, then Andy Hutchins, Pat Chambers, and Scott Levin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Pam Good. Since the beginning of this legislative session, I have never seen and heard so many people deliberately trying to destroy a level of liberty, the highest level of liberty in the world, and that's in Alaska. Those who are in favor of this bill, these proposed factors are not necessary for an efficiently operating government. The ones that enjoy the place from the youth spot on bonus taxes, but not for an efficient government.
I'm sure that if we're trying
having to go in and have to drink a little bit. People from that time in the building, and people 30 miles are constantly forgetting that they need to buy another gas tax. I mean, that is going to be enough money to have enough money. It's going to cost you people to give you more and more and more and more. Our rule is that we've got a package unit. We don't have a Alaska. It doesn't live here, but there's a lot of people who do live in Alaska. And this is a lot of great state. I want you to remember that. There's no other place you can do it. This is a lot of great place to live. And you know, if you need a good tree, I'm going to move over. This is a lot of place. But we really need a balanced budget to it. And I believe you guys to do that. I know you guys have a tough room to come home and not find you. You need to go and say, Governor, it's time. You don't need to do any of this. No, no, you don't need to stop. We're really kind of saying that you need to really do this kind of stuff. It's time to really balance the budget. There's no money. We can't pay it. Just don't ask you to pay the full money. Because I know it. That's all I want to say.
Thank you, Angie. Next, Super Council, followed by Democratic resident Scott Hogan.
Yes, can you hear me? This is Stuart Thompson.
Yes, can you hear me, sir?
Good. Greetings to the chairwoman and members of the Senate Mayor and Commerce Committee. As a constituent of the Senator, I've been signed and testifying in support of SB 134 on behalf of myself. Start with my time doing a prepared testimony. Legislators, passing these budgets, the previous minister of both the Alaska government and the Alaska people towards our political heritage, have trapped us into enacting a state complex. Over 8 years ago, I made a vain effort to get our political traditions to first deliberately state aid complying by the legislature through widespread personal conduct. Yet I was pushed off like I was a clueless barking dog. I wasn't the only one. If someone failed to learn from our strong clusters, there is no refusal to learn about Indian capabilities led Professor's last year, the last December, the refusal to learn from our political heritage has led us to our current financial crisis. So please start entertaining the idea that we are citizens doing their duty for our last the Constitution's Article 1, Section 1, rightfully to the end of solving our financial problems. So listen to the testifier's ideas. Here's what I suggest. One, simultaneously with enacting the Alaska income tax with a sunset clause, use Alaska Constitution Article 1, Section 1 and 2 to all Denver citizens together each week, have them first give recommendations about the, how the state can ethically and reasonably increase its income through new income systems. Example, see my 5 standalone new income streams presented to the State Finance Committee last year for Senator Stevens SDR1 and Civics Education. Then have them review past budgets and determine their recommendations on how to live within our needs. Fighting and struggling over budget cuts by selfish constituents and government bureaucracy is cured by having Alaskans live up to their constitutional responsibilities. Two, the legislature must rise above the rational thinking that you get things for free. You must determine how we demean ourselves from being forced to allocate state funds to match federal funds bribery. The federal government is desperately hiding bankruptcy. Obvious to anybody who knows great school arithmetic. If the legislature doesn't start doing this now, the future will make our current financial crisis seem like a steel bite. Three, believe in the truth. That Alaska and its citizens can be self-supporting and self-sufficient. That is why our political heritage's greatest financial management maxim, namely, income greater than outgo plus reserves, I repeat, income greater than outgo plus reserves, I say again, income greater than outgoing plus reserves. Thanks for your attention. Good luck on your deliberations.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Next, we have Pat Chambers, followed by Scott Hogan.
Hello?
Yes, Pat, can you hear me?
do that, then don't tell their CRP because I don't think that they don't have to spend money. So I would like to suggest that, you know, to cut budgeting, cut regulation, get a long-term plan that grows with your family, lots of money, save some for the rainy day this year and last year, and probably for next year. And I'd like to suggest to keep Alaska free and try to help low-income folks. Low-income folks is the largest starting point for people to come and live here. And don't copy New York or California. Keep Alaska to be the last frontier. Don't do it correctly. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Matthews. I'm calling you from Colorado.
Madam Chair, and thank you for sacrificing your opinion to hear from citizens of Alaska. I served as an embodied chairman now, 12 years ago. I recently, I tried to put the house resources before I left. Obviously, this is my program's budget by 50%. I did so by laying myself off. Yes, we made decisions on the lower end of my unit. I took the circuit pattern experts to be positioned by. If I can do it, other people can do it. I'm really disappointed that the focus is just simply getting our big budget taxes instead of looking at the actual programs that the legislature will have to be here over the years.
Thank you for being here to listen to the testimony, and that means you're